I'm sure that there are, if you wanted to shop up a self-help book today, you're going to find one on Amazon, and here's why. Because Amazon currently carries over 626,000 books on self-help. Any topic, anything you need help with, you can find it on Amazon. 626,000 seems like a lot. I thought it would be more, but even that seems like a lot of books. And here's what I understand that to mean, that there are people who want to help other people, so they write a book. But more than that, there's a market for people who need help, people who want help, and that are looking to a book to help change their life. We are building this series on a foundation here today, a principle that I want to remind you of. And here is the principle, that to change your life, you can do something very practical and specific, and it will help bring life transformation. And here's what it is. It's to remind yourself of the characteristics of God and all that that means for your everyday life. So life change doesn't necessarily mean focusing on yourself and reminding yourself that you're good enough, you're smart enough, and that people like you. There's a self-esteem movement, which means to improve yourself, to feel better about your life, you have to first start to feel better about yourself. Let me back it up a bit more than that and explain that I believe that if you have a higher esteem for God, your life will improve. So it's a matter not necessarily of focusing on feeling better about you, but getting a clearer belief about who God is, beholding him clearer and believing him to be who he says he is. So to change your life, remind yourself of God's characteristics. So we're going to talk about God's characteristics today in a series of four of them. We're on number three. And this will particularly appeal to anyone in this room who are people pleasers by nature. How many of you are willing to admit that you're a people pleaser? Now, don't forget, if you're a people pleaser, I want you to raise your hand. It's the only way you can make me, yeah. So a lot of us just are prone to being people pleasers. We may have learned how to be a people pleaser because of the way that our home functioned growing up. We become people pleasers maybe later on in our adult life. Other people just are willing to yield to others more naturally, and they become people pleasers. But I wonder today if you're struggling with it. Struggling with people pleasing. And the reason I ask is because if you remain primarily a people pleaser, it's quite possible that you will remain mostly on the inside empty and anxious. And when your peace and your happiness depends on the happiness of someone else, you have imprisoned yourself to them. And you have enslaved yourself to keep serving their happiness so that you can find some happiness. Is there, I wonder, of course, if there are any of you who are people pleasers who are struggling to please someone, you have started to realize that they control how you feel about yourself. What they feel about you controls how you feel about you. And that tends to shape how you see yourself. Now, I recently talked to someone who was trying to get fit, and I was involved in a group of people trying to help them just get healthy overall. And she said, she was talking about how much weight she had lost in her new fitness classes. And she said, today I lost 190 pounds. And we were like, that seems like a lot. She goes, no, I mean, today I broke up with my boyfriend who weighed 190 pounds. And what she went on to explain was he didn't like the fact that I was getting fit. He didn't like the fact that I was taking care of myself. He didn't like the fact that I started to prioritize myself and I wasn't at his beckoning call every minute of the day because I was at the gym or I was, you know, shopping for myself some fresh food and so on. And she had confessed that his view of her had controlled her life for years, and she had just lost 190 pounds in one day. I love that idea. I said, I got to find somewhere to tell that story. Maybe on a Sunday. I also know that people who are prone to be people pleasers, they have forfeited really a lot of peace and happiness in their own life because they live to make someone else happy, and if they ain't happy, nobody's happy. And there might be a person in your house. I grew up this way. We all agreed in my home that when mama ain't happy in my house, it was the same for you. Maybe you've probably heard this before, that there ain't nobody happy in the house. I remember as a teenager absorbing my mom's frustration, and she'd be slamming cupboard doors because something went down in the family. And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, I'm mad too. There's got to be something I could be frustrated and mad, but you just can't dwell with someone like that and still be upbeat and positive and happy. And here's my thought. My thought is that if you live to make someone else happy, every day they're not happy, you can't be happy yourself. And if they're not pleased, you're not pleased. So this message is, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to try to help you, do my best to help you change your focus. And to help you get your life back, not by focusing on your life, but focus on what you're focusing on. And whether or not we admit it or not, no matter how conscious we are of it, we can revive our own life and revive our freedom by reminding ourselves of who God is, what his character is like, and then what that means for us in our everyday life. In fact, only better believing has the power to improve your behaving. A.W. Tozier, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, he puts it this way. This is how far A.W. Tozier is willing to go. He's willing to go this far. The most important thing about anyone is what comes to their mind when they're asked the question, what is God like? Or what comes into our minds when we think about God? That is, according to him, the most important thing that defines us. It defines how we live. And what you believe about God is driving, this is what we're going to look at today, and you'll see this in your big idea. What you believe about God is driving how you behave around people. Who would have ever thought that? It's not what you think about people. It's not necessarily what you believe about yourself, but here's what's driving the way you behave around people. It's what you believe about God is actually the driving and shaping force that causes you to behave the way you do around people. And I'm looking forward to explaining this to you here this morning. So this message series, all of this message series really is intended to help us see how our beliefs about what God is like affect our everyday actions, not just our Sunday morning action. So let's start with this. God is glorious. We've already said that God is good. We've already said that God is great. And now we're on this, God is glorious. Now, we have different ways of defining glorious. For most of us, when we say something's glorious, we mean it kind of causes us to stand back a little bit. I remember when I first got my hair to feather in ninth grade, and I stood back in the mirror and was like, that is a glorious hairdo. It only lasted a month before I permed it. Just kidding. But when I was young, it would be how someone or something looks that was glorious. Then, as a maturing adult, I now step back looking at a sunset and I say, that is a glorious sunset, glorious sunrise, glorious night sky with stars that are shining so bright in an endless sky. But just like God is not great like an enjoyable steak, he's also not glorious like an enjoyable sunset. It is, the definition that I'm implying here for glorious is something far greater. It is unique to God himself. Here's the definition, you've got it in your notes. Defining, the definition of glorious, possessing infinite worth, infinite, limitless, beyond what you can quantify. No bookends, there's no beginning, no end. Infinite worth. He has infinite beauty and virtue and excellence. And when you're talking about something that's valuable, God, in his gloriousness, what that means is he has supreme value. There is nothing, no one, nowhere, no how that is more valuable than God himself, the creator. And that's what that word means. And if you look to the Hebrew, you'll find that the word glorious or having glory means heaviness. And it doesn't mean the weight that something has. It means the importance that it has. It means the amount of influence that it has over someone or something. It's the weight that it carries in your life. Let me give you an example. Your boss is more glorious in your life than your coworkers. There's more weightiness, right? Your spouse has more weight, probably, than your friends or the rest of your family. Now, I gotta confess to you that I already loathe the day when my daughter's boyfriend has more weightiness and influence than their dad. I have decided to be pre-angry. I'm angry before getting angry about it. Thank you for that. It's a fellowship of dads. So when something carries more weight, more influence, it is more important. It is said to have glory. It is glorious in the definition that we're defining here. So when we look to what the Israelites say, by the way, the Israelites were the ones who were up close and personal with God. They didn't write about a God who was. They weren't writing, forecasting a God who would be. They were currently and presently with God, the Creator, in so many different ways we see in the Old Testament. They're the ones who lived with God and knew Him firsthand. And here's what they said. They said, there is no God among all the gods that we have witnessed and all the tribes and all the nations of all of the earth. There is no one and nothing more glorious than God. What do they mean? More weighty, more valuable, infinite in His supreme worth and beauty. And here's how they describe it. In Exodus 15:11, they're recounting this glorious experience that they had with God where He demonstrated His glory by parting the Red Sea. And look how they describe it. They say in Exodus 15:11, who is like you among the gods, O Lord? And here's how they describe Him: glorious in holiness, awesome in splendor, performing great wonders. And here's the rhetorical question. Is Allah more glorious than you? Is the little man Buddha more glorious than you? Is the Hindu gods, every single last little finite one of them, are they more glorious than you? Is this energy, this essence, this God energy more glorious than the God who created it? And their answer is obviously, emphatically, there is none quite like God in His weightiness and in His... Listen to the description that the Hebrews are recording, relaying when they're talking about what God just did. How many of you remember the parting of the Red Sea, right? I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. Actually, I was talking about the Jordan River. But at the Red Sea, you've got the Israelites here, and they're looking at this Red Sea that is in front of them as they're escaping the Egyptian army. And they are led by, of course, Pharaoh, who are now coming to kind of reclaim them and bring them back or do whatever they're going to do to them after they were exiled, or they left Egypt. And they're remembering what God did. And here's how the Israelites describe the glory of God. They say, in the greatness of your majesty, you overthrow those who rise against you. You unleash your blazing fury. It consumes them like straw. At the blast of your breath, this sounds like my house sometimes when my wife loses her cool on the kids. And it doesn't really. She loves them gently. It consumes them like straw. At the blast of your breath, the waters piled up. The surging waters stood straight like a wall. In the heart of the sea, and the deep waters became hard. The enemy boasted, I will chase them and catch up with them. Your hand will destroy them. But you blew with your breath, and the sea covered them, and they sank like lead in the mighty waters. Who is like you among the gods, O Lord? And they're recounting the real life example of God demonstrating His glory. One of the prophets, Isaiah, was speaking on behalf of God as God was revealing Himself. And let me share with you real quick what the prophet Isaiah said, which was God speaking through the prophet Isaiah to His people. Isaiah was speaking forth for God. And for those of you who love science, for those of you who have a unique affection and adoration for science, you might simply ask the question, you know, Pastor, I've seen the galaxies, and I pay very close attention to the way that science works, and I have a unique appreciation for how vast the heavens are. And you might be tempted to say, those heavens are so glorious. I can't even imagine a God more glorious than them. And here's what Isaiah says. Isaiah says, those heavens are not more glorious to God because it's God Himself, the Creator, who spread those heavens into place. God is the one that separated one part of heaven from another part of heaven and placed all the stars in space. And for others, there are others certainly who have a unique adoration for the earth. for this particular earth and has a growing a passion and urgency to preserve the earth. And I don't mean being a good steward of the earth, but you might be prone to adore the earth, to prioritize the value of the earth over human beings. And it might be easy for you to look at all of the majestic way in which the earth works and the way we depend on the earth and ask the question, isn't the earth more glorious than God? Here's what Isaiah says. The earth is not more glorious than God because he alone created the earth and all of the creatures in it. Every single cell and every single DNA and every single enzyme and every single protein that causes life to occur has been created by God himself. Now, some of us aren't quite as focused on the heavens. We're not quite as focused on the earth. We find ourselves very much focused on people. And you look into the eyes of an infant child who's starting to respond and you see life in their soul, and maybe you have a child yourself or you have grandbabies and you can't even fathom the idea that there is anyone or anything more glorious than a human being, especially one that belongs to you and calls you mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. But here's what God says through Isaiah, that it is indeed not those children who are more glorious than God, because he is the one who fills their life with breath. And if he were to take their breath from them, they would be a bag of skin and a pile of bones. That God inflates their lungs with breath and he animates their life with a soul. That he indeed is more glorious than the heavens. He's more glorious than the earth. He's more glorious than every creature and human being that populates the earth. And the reason is because he is responsible for the life of all of it. And the prophets also say this. You have this in your notes. He will not share his glory. How does God feel about his own glory? He feels so convincingly about it that he won't share it. He won't share it with anyone, and he won't share it with anything. This is how the Old Testament describes it. It describes God as being jealous for his own glory. Now, when you think of the word jealous, what do you think of? Am I the only one who thinks of some little petty, insecure, weak someone? You know, when someone gets jealous, you're kind of like, you got to just loosen up, grow up, lighten up, grow some thick skin, right? But when we're talking about God's jealousy here, we're not talking about weakness. It's not fear. God's not like an employer who's nervous that someone's going to come along and offer more salary to his employees and he's going to lose them and then he's going to have to replace them. God's not afraid or fearful or weak. In fact, if you're able to, can you follow along? I want to read you what an author and pastor, John Piper, says about the jealousy of God. Because it sounds like so God does have a weakness. He gets jealous. It's not what we're saying. Listen to this. Here's what John Piper says. God is jealous like a powerful and merciful king who takes a peasant girl from a life of shame, forgives her, marries her, and gives her not the chores of a slave but the privileges of a wife or a queen. His jealousy does not rise from fear or weakness, but from a holy indignation at having his honor and power and mercy scorned by the faithlessness of a fickle spouse. God is infinitely jealous for the honor of his name and responds with terrible wrath against those whose hearts should belong to him, but instead they go after other things. So really what God is jealous for is that you need him more than anyone and anything else. He has given more to you than anyone and anything else. And he has the heart of a husband longing for the affections of the bride. And he recognizes that to the degree in which you turn to other things is the degree in which you are unsatisfied and empty. And he says, I will not let my reputation be tarnished. So now, listen, it's one thing to believe that God is glorious. And that might help us on Sunday morning. We might sing louder, might actually get a hand up in the air while we're singing. We might give the pastor a little under my breath, oh, amen to that. But then on the everyday life that you and I lead, it's often forgettable. Because what happens is, though God was glorious on Sunday morning, especially during that one song with that one singer that I really love, God was super glorious. But now that it's Monday, back with my coworkers, my family, my kids, all the stressors in my life. I've got to move. I'm facing anxiety. I've got all kinds of other things. All of a sudden now, there are other things that are more glorious in our lives. They have more influence, more weight. They're more important to us, and they start to weigh on us and press us away from God. So let me ask you to consider this. What if you really believe that God is glorious? Here's how it would change your life forever. If you believe that God is glorious, you don't ever have to fear other people. No fear of other people, because you don't give them that much influence. They don't have that much importance. They don't have that much weight in your life. Instead, all of that has been reserved for God and reserved for God alone. And it's true that most of us likely struggle with what the Bible might call fear of man. Now, in junior high school, we call this peer pressure. Do you remember peer pressure? Here's my theory on peer pressure. Peer pressure starts when you're young. By the way, my kids, the peer pressure didn't start when they were in junior high school. It started way before that. I was like, isn't 3 years old too early? But what my theory on peer pressure is that the peer pressure doesn't go away. We start to do a better job of disguising how much it influences our life. We just become more adept at handling peer pressure. We don't show it as much. It's not as obvious. It's not as blatant as it is when we're young. But fearing people is a dangerous trap. The author in Proverbs writes it this way: fearing people is a dangerous trap, but there is safety in trusting the Lord. There is safety in letting God be the glorious one in our lives with the most weight. Why isn't God more glorious in your life? Here's a theory I have, and I don't really probably even know your story. My theory is that your view of humans, people, is probably too big. Your view and esteem that you have for humans is probably too broad, too deep, too high. And if your view of people is too high, you'll notice the effect of it. You'll feel the impact if that's true for you. And one impact or one symptom of that is that you spend way too much time and way too much energy worrying about what people think of us, think of you. I mean, haven't you heard this, that one person said that when you're young, you think that everyone's thinking about you, and when you're old, you come to realize nobody's thinking about you. But one of the symptoms of a too high a view of people is that there's way too much time wasted, way too much energy worrying about what people think. Now, I'm not talking about having no regard for your reputation as it represents God well. I don't mean that. I don't mean that you disregard the impact of character and integrity to represent and radiate who God is well in your life. I simply mean an overly sensitive concern with what people think of you. And then the other part of this symptom is the fact that you find yourself only telling some people what they want to hear instead of telling them the truth. In love. And you wish you could tell them the truth, but you can't. Because you fear the lashback. You fear the consequences. And I wonder, who is the one person that you have in your own life that you're most trying to please? Now, if you're a parent, it might be a child. And you live to please that child or those children. And you recognize that you can't even tell your child the truth, even though they need to hear it. And I don't mean you can't meddle, or you can't stick your nose where it doesn't belong. You can't make their business your business. I mean, you just at times just want to share the truth with them in love, and you can't do it because you know that there is going to be devastating lashback, and you're afraid of that, and you don't want to cause that much trouble for them or for you or for anyone else. It might be a spouse that either you're with or you're estranged from, but you can't be yourself. And you can't share your own opinions. You can't share your own ideas. You can't reveal who you are, what you feel about something. You can only tell them what they want to hear. And in the meantime, you're paralyzed trying to be who they want you to be rather than who you really are and what you really think. And here's a couple of questions. You have these in your notes. I wanted you to have some questions to ask yourself, because it's possible that you don't know that you fear others too much, but here's one way to determine that. How much do I listen, trust, and obey them? How much? How much do they affect my behavior, or how much do they cost me? Am I spending time and money on them? Thirdly, how much time do I spend with, pursuing, or thinking about them? If you answer that question and you start to realize it's an abundance, it's inordinate, it's more than other people, it's quite possible that that particular person is someone that you fear. And what we might change in our lives if we really view God as glorious is this: when we fear only God, we care more, 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 more about what God thinks and what people think. Ultimately, we recognize, as Jesus said, that we should not care as much about what people think. And here's what Jesus says: the reason is because they only have the power to kill your body. But you should fear only God, because he's the only one who can destroy both the soul and the body. Now, I find myself willingly steering clear of anyone who can kill my body. But here's what Jesus is saying: there's extra weightiness, there's extra glory, there's extra importance to concern yourself more with what God thinks, because he alone is the one who has a say in where your soul spends eternity. That there is a greater glory for God. So here's what this means. I thought I'd work through the implications of this. Listen to this: when we fear only God, and we care more about what God thinks than what people think, we don't make our decisions to earn human approval. We're not making our decisions to make someone else like us more. We're not making our decisions to try to win someone over so that they have a higher esteem for us. We have the freedom to make our decisions based on what the glorious one thinks, the one that is exclusively the one that we fear the most, who is God. And so what that means is that we are powerfully freed, when this is true, to love others like we should, instead of just trying to please them all the time. We are powerfully free to do what's best for them, not just what makes them happy. Haven't you discovered that in your life and the lives of your children and your friends and family, that there are so many examples of how what would please them is not what's best for them? How many of you remember having that conversation with one of your kids or grandkids recently and trying to explain to them, I know this is like every 2 hours in my house. This may not please you, but it's best for you. And secondly, we're not controlled by what others say or think about us. When we fear only God, we are free. We are not controlled any longer by what others say about us or what they think about us. We kind of cut the cord from having to make sure that we are causing people to say or think things, specific things about us. So we don't waste any more time, no more wasted energy worrying about what other people are thinking about us. No more losing sleep at night, obsessing over what might have just been a meaningless comment. That means when somebody says to us, hey, you know what I noticed this week? You're looking a lot healthier. You don't have to think, what in the world do they think? Are you calling me fat? What do you mean healthier? And you don't have to lay awake at night thinking, you know what, they didn't say anything last week. Does that mean last week that they thought I looked unhealthy? Are you familiar with the kinds of thoughts that get trapped in our brain that make us obsess over what someone thinks about us and bring us to paralysis? And now we're trying to figure out how to avoid people because people might say something to us, or they might say something about us, or they might have mentioned something. And when you care primarily about the glorious God and what he thinks, and you're not afraid of what other people think, you set yourself free from obsessing over what they might have meant when they said what they said. And there is a confident peace that fills someone who fears only God and fears God primarily. Thirdly, we don't obsess over our own image and our own reputation. Now, some of you might say, Pastor, I'm not sure that there's a lot of people who obsess over their own image. Just look at their files of selfies. You tell me if someone is obsessed over their own image. I mean, I'm all for a good fun selfie now and then, but holy cow, You don't have to obsess over your own image, and you don't have to work so hard to build and enhance your own reputation. By the way, Peter says in Peter that if you find yourself in trouble and your reputation is on the line, here's what he says. Remain silent, because if you have a good reputation, it will speak on your behalf. And you don't have to obsess over it. If you work yourself towards fearing only God, you'll never have to worry about enhancing, maintaining, or working at that reputation. So, since we have God's approval, now in the gospel, you place your faith in Jesus. And when you place your faith in Jesus, he approves you as if you have done all the work that Jesus did, and as if you have paid the price of sin, which is death, like Jesus has in your place. And he approves you. He doesn't approve you based on what you've done. He doesn't approve you based on how good you live. He doesn't approve you on any of those reasons. You are approved based on your faith. If you believe and receive, God makes you his own child, and he approves you because you belong to him. This is the same reason I say to my boys on a regular basis when they're snuggling into bed, does Daddy love you because you did all the right things today? No, Dad. Does Dad love you because you didn't do bad things today? No. Does Dad love you because of how handsome you are, how well that you played a sport or an instrument or your hobby or how well you did school? No, Dad. Why does Daddy love you? Because we belong to you. And here's what God is saying. God is saying, you belong to me. I have already approved you, and you don't have to throw your life away trying to win over other people. And if you recognize that today, that you have God's approval because of your faith in Jesus, you confess, you have the openness and freedom to confess that you really do genuinely fear other people. And more so, more often, more than you fear God himself. That people have an inordinate amount of influence on not just how you feel about yourself, but on what you're doing and spending your time with. And if you trust that God is indeed glorious, then today I wonder if you would give him, that you would offer him more than you ever have, not half-hearted faith, but wholehearted faith that belongs to him alone. And thirdly, could you focus more on not protecting and enhancing your image, but bearing God's image? Let's pray together. Father, there's a whole church family here. Some of us have had our lives squeezed from us. We have let other people steal our peace, steal our happiness because we've devoted ourselves to them. And God, I ask you today to restore and revive and bring new life back to our church family, each and every one of our church family, not because we think more highly of ourselves, but because we rightly adore you for how glorious you are. We rightly yield our hearts. We rightly submit to you and you alone. We rightly ascribe the importance, value, weightiness that you deserve. We pray today that in that you would bring freedom, freedom, freedom. Joy and joy and more joy. Peace and peace and more peace. Because it is true of us that we believe in our believer that you are a glorious God. And we don't just believe so this morning, God. We believe every day that you've given us life and breath and our eyes are open to enjoy what you've given us. And we ask you to do all these things in Jesus' strong name. Amen. Would you stand?